This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Etopia Media Technology News Network. We're about to talk with Stuart Pockney, who is the project coordinator for the program coordinator for the advanced technology projects at the National Environmentally Sound Production Agriculture Laboratory at the University of Georgia. And if we have time to talk to him after giving his title, we'll do so. Welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Mark.
This is the third interview we've done. We've done two experiments, which people will be able to see the second of if they click on the link right below this. It's a video of you being interviewed by me a few minutes ago, but without sound. So if they can figure out a way to watch one on one computer and one on the other, they can see and hear you at the same time. And hopefully in the future we'll be able to do it in a single program.
Yeah, we're learning as we go.
Right. What are the advanced technology projects at the National Environmentally Sound Production Agriculture Laboratory at the University of Georgia?
I mean, that's a mouthful, isn't it?
Yes,
why we shorten it to just NESPAL. But
NESPAL, right.
We have been involved for over the last decade in a number of fairly high tech projects, collectively under the moniker of precision agriculture, which many people might be familiar with, it, which is all about farmers using global positioning systems to navigate around fields and to basically improve their yields of their farm. Currently, we've got a number of different ones underway, but the one that is generating a lot of interest right now, and I know that you're specifically interested in, is the wireless networking project.
Right, or otherwise known as the virtual farm.
Right.
What's the basic concept of the virtual farm then?
Well, essentially what we're trying to achieve with this project is we're trying to get farmers with ubiquitous internet access. So no matter where they are on their farm, they can get get internet access and local area network access.
Right.
The reason that we're interested in doing this is because we just don't. It's one thing the farmers can sure they can go out and they can surf the web from anywhere around their farms or on their tractors.
Right.
But what we're really trying to get done is to use the internet as a medium for both monitoring what's happening in the farms, be that monitoring switch positions, gate positions, pumps on or off, or where their tractors are or where their irrigation systems are, as well as actually being a command and control mechanism to actually perhaps drive those tractors around the fields or turn pumps on and off or turn irrigation systems on and off.
Right. Now, in fact, what you're talking about is essentially bringing the same kind of ubiquitous command and control through the internet that exists in so many other milieu. A few that come to mind, of course, for example, an aircraft carrier that's city blocks long and that has thousands of subsystems that are essentially monitored one way or another from a central control station, not to mention any really big corporation that has to work and has thousands of employees and factories and things to do. It's all being monitored by electronic systems. Essentially, you're talking about bringing that level of command and control to the agricultural environment.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, if you look, I mean, a farm doesn't have thousands of employees, generally
right.
speaking, although some do.
Right.
But what they do have is thousands of acres to cover. So what that means is a farmer will spend a whole lot of time running around in his pickup, either checking his fields, checking his crops, checking his workers, checking his irrigation systems, for instance, checking his cattle. This is all dead time, essentially. Now, if he can be back in that central location, whether it's at the farmstead or whether it's off the farm even, and being able to monitor what's happening without actually spending the time and spending the fuel to go out and do it, he'll be a lot better off.
Now, this, in a sense, though, is really nothing new, because the mechanization of agriculture has been going on, I guess, since Cyrus McCormick invented the reaper.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. I mean, a lot of people think of farming as being a fairly low-tech thing, but a lot of people also don't realize that farmers drive around machinery that's often worth several hundred thousand dollars just for something like a harvester, and is, basically full to the eyeballs with technology.
Right.
And I've lost my train of thought.
Well, because the mechanization and now the automation of the agricultural process has been a continuous one for over a century by now.
Right, right. That's exactly right. I mean, farmers aren't any strangers to technology. I mean, what a lot of people don't realize is that farming is probably one of the biggest markets out there for global positioning systems.
Right. Talk a little bit about that, because that you already have an established track record with that. How is GPS, Global Positioning Satellite System, used in agriculture now?
Well, we use them in a bunch of different ways. We use them to navigate around fields. We use them to map things in fields. We map where the yields are good, where the yields are poor, where we need more fertilizer, where we need less fertilizer. We use them to guide applications of things like where do we put more pesticides or which type of pesticides.
Is satellite imaging good enough that you'll be able to look at a field from low Earth orbit and see that certain parts of the field are getting too much water, not enough pesticide or whatever, and something needs to be done about it?
It can be tricky. I mean, we can definitely get good resolution from satellite imagery of our fields. We then have to go back and interpret what the colors mean, essentially, in those pictures. And that can sometimes be a little bit convoluted. But, farmers are definitely doing it today, both from satellites and from aerial imagery.
And, in fact, they can look. A farmer who can look at a plant and run it between his fingers can also look at a plant in an image and see that it's got mold or rust or it's too dry or it's too wet or whatever is wrong with it.
That's right. There's a lot of ways that plants show what's going on internally, externally.
Right.
So you can look at leaves, you can see lesions, you can look at differences in colors. Much as like many of our listeners here might recognize things that are going on in their garden, just by the way the leaves are looking.
And it also sounds like telemedicine, essentially, where experts can be called in from anywhere in the world to examine a patient or a leaf that's having some problems and be able to give their diagnosis.
Yeah, one of the great things about America is we've got a really good base of crop experts in our university systems. The problem is, of course, that if you're looking at a rural area, those few PhDs who really have all the answers can't get around to all the farms.
Right, and that's just in the United States. There are agricultural operations in other countries, in other continents as well, I imagine.
Absolutely.
And the availability of experts who understand the nuances of some of these problems may not be available there, but they might be available in the United States. This sounds like a reverse of outsourcing. You can have cameras in India looking at plants and people in Iowa telling them what's wrong and having the money flow appropriately in that subsystem. Kind of onshoring of agricultural expertise.
Sure. I mean, agricultural experts from this country travel around the world, yearly, this would be one way for them to extend their capabilities even further. So that's a great application, but it doesn't just stop at crop experts. I mean, another great use is for electronic experts. I mean, there is so much electronics in this day and age on farms that when something goes wrong, you might have to wait a few days before a technician can come out to your farm and look at it. And it's also expensive because you have to pay for his travel, obviously. Well, if he can come over the internet and actually diagnose what's happening with your electronics, it's a win-win situation as well.
In the same way that the technical support people, whether they're stationed in India or in the United States, don't have to get on a train and go over to your house and come in and fix your computer, they can often do it, although not always, over the phone or over the internet.
Yeah, that's exactly the case. And clearly you've brought up a good point, that there are some things, I mean, you're going to need hands-on. But there's a lot of things, as you know, that potentially can be done over the phone or could be done over the internet.
Okay, now, you've convinced me there's a lot of big advantages here. What's the situation sort of on the ground, if you'll pardon the expression? Is the University of Georgia developing sort of model systems here? Are big corporations getting into this yet? Are you trying to encourage more big corporations who are already working on the internet but not in the agricultural sector specifically to get involved? What's happening in that regard?
Well, what we're doing at the University of Georgia is we have set up a number of demonstration farms that are applying these technologies, things like wireless video cameras in a vegetable packing shed, things like our wireless GPS units that are feeding position data back from irrigation systems on a 600-acre farm back to the homestead. What we're really trying to do is show people that these technologies, open and standard-based technologies that are now used for internet access, really have great potential for farms. And what we're trying to do is really raise the profile of the farm market and show technology companies that this is probably a sector that they really need to look hard at.
How big a sector is it?
Well, the farming sector, I mean, it's a $600 billion market in North America alone.
With a B, $600
billion,
right? In the United States?
In the United States alone.
So a small fraction of that would be a pretty lucrative opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And farmers are certainly not adverse to spending money on technology.
Okay. How big of a problem, or where's the solution to providing the ubiquitous wireless internet access that's pretty much at the heart of this whole approach?
Well, there's kind of two issues. One, we have to get broadband internet to the farm gate. We have to get that into the farmer's home so that they have basically a strong connection with the outside world. And the next thing we need to do is we need to make sure that we have what I call sort of the last acre access, where we've got wireless internet access over the whole farm.
Now, does the technology exist to do that? Is it a matter of developing the technology, paying the money, or educating the people to explain why they need it, or some combination?
It's a matter of all three of those.
Okay.
I mean, definitely the technology exists to do it now, if you hold your mouth right and if you pay enough money,
right.
and if you're prepared to go through the pain, because the systems that are out there currently still lack a little bit on the reliability side and the robustness side, and require some pretty strong learning curves.
Now, is WiMAX, which is long-range broadband wireless internet connectivity, how's that coming, and what kind of role would that play in all this?
Well, it kind of remains to see actually what sort of role that'll play, but certainly that technology, I think, offers a lot of promise for this sort of application. But it's not just WiMAX. I mean, they're potentially we're looking at things like broadband over power line. We're looking at satellite-delivered internet access.
Now, again, about those, are those technologies that are ready to go now and it's a matter of people understanding that and moving to use them, or is there additional work that needs to be done? All those power lines that run through the countryside, are you saying that broadband internet can be brought to the farm through those wires now?
Well, I mean, definitely there are some fairly small scale implementations around the country at this point,
right.
Doing that, and it remains to be seen, because obviously it's more than just a technical problem. It's also a sort of an economic problem for the companies to provide this,
and maybe a political problem. I think in the last few years there's been, at least on the official level, there've been some moves to provide broadband to less served areas, to rural areas. Is there a need for more government action, or is now the time for individual farmers to take advantage of what's already been provided, do you think?
Well, I mean,
or both,
it'll probably be a mix of both.
Right.
I mean, on the one hand, you know, clearly there has been political pressure to try and bridge this so-called digital divide and get high-speed internet out to rural populations. But also we need to prove that there is a viable market out in the rural communities. You know, and it's one thing just to use the internet for leisure and to surf the web, but it's a whole different market if you consider that there could potentially be farmers out there who can use this thing for really viable, business purposes.
So if you'll pardon the expression, it's sort of a chicken and an egg situation, if there were more demand, there'd be more supply, and if there were more supply, there'd be more demand, and something has to be done to sort of precipitate the transformation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And I think if we can show people that demand would exist, if some of the applications we're talking about here, some of the real production or the applications that will benefit farm production and farm economics, and we can get farmers to start thinking about utilizing that and get technology companies starting to think about how they might not necessarily alter their products, but take their products and move them into this market.
Okay, now, if the market were more saturated with these products, is that likely to assist or retard the demise of the family farm, would you say?
Well, I think it's kind of neutral in that regard.
How so?
Well, I mean, the demise of the family farm, it's sort of hard to quantify because it is such a sort of an emotional issue. I mean,
right.
Is it a good thing or a bad thing? It's, you know, it depends from which side of the coin you're looking at it, I guess. And
right.
It's something that we have been dealing with in the farming sector for really decades now. you know, this, on the one hand, you could look at it and say, well, you know, a corporate farmer could take this technology and he could boot a bunch of family farmers off their farms and then take over and basically control them and monitor them remotely with a much smaller workforce.
Right.
On the other hand, you could look at it and you could say, well, hey, a family farmer could take this technology and perhaps spend more of his time off the farm, perhaps with a second job in an urban area, but at the same time still be virtually present on his farm and keeping things running and keeping things going when he couldn't be there physically. So it's like anything. It's like any technology. I mean, there's pluses and there's minuses depending on the individual who's utilizing it.
Back to the first tool of a rock that you could use to hit someone on the head or keep the fire from spreading into the outside the campfire. So it's
exactly.
dual use technology, I guess, has been with us for a long time. How are other countries doing on this? Is the United States, under George's leadership, ahead of the pack, or the Europeans hard at work on this, or what?
There have been... I think we're at the head of the pack now. But you know, the technology changes so darn quickly that you know we have to really make sure we are on the ball and make sure we are taking some leadership in this. Certainly, there are some murmurs around the world. There are different people who have looked at it and maybe utilized it in some small scales. But I don't think that anyone has looked into the depths that we're looking at it now. One of the other big benefits that we have here, of course, is that U.S. is the originator of the internet and of internet technology. So we've got a big brains trust here who can turn their mind to this. One of the things that we're trying to do, or one of the things we are doing this summer, for instance, is holding a conference here in Tifton for agricultural researchers and for industry personnel who are interested to really discuss some of these issues.
Is there a website for people who are interested?
Yeah.
What is it?
The website for the meeting this summer is www.nespal.org/wireless2004.
Okay, we'll put a link to that right underneath the link to the video of you standing in the field. People can trust you were saying the same thing you were saying now.
Perfect.
except you're in the field saying it. Thank you very much, and hopefully we'll keep in touch on this, and we'll be able to monitor the progress of what seems like a very valuable opportunity, both for the internet industry and for agriculture
and
generally.
Agriculture. Yeah.
Okay.
Perfect.
Thanks very much for talking to us.
Okay.
All right. Bye.